is the Heavy Hole Podcast. I am your host, Big Will, a.k.a. Uncle Buck. Joining me again, my co-host, Ian Conies, returns to the podcast. Welcome back.
Yo, thank you so much for having me, Will.
No, thank you for making the time now, man. Congratulations. I know you have expanded. You and your wife have expanded your ever-growing clan over there at the compound, man. We appreciate that. You made the time tonight, man. Congratulations on behalf of the Heavy Hole family.
Thank you so much. Yeah, this is kid number four. We were just talking a moment ago about it. And hey, man, this is all I got time for these fucking days. Like these little Zoom calls, you know? So yeah. I'll definitely make these work. Keep me sane.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. How are you doing over there? Are you tired? You getting much sleep? What's going on? You feeling all right?
You know what I've been on? I'll put you onto something right now.
Uh-oh.
I'm a seltzer guy. I used to hate, like, not hard seltzers, just fucking carbonated water, you know? There's like Howell's seltzer brand. I don't know if you see that ever.
Yes.
But they have like the plastic bottles, you know, like a 20-ounce seltzer, and they make one that's called Cola is the flavor. And it has 120 milligrams of caffeine in it, but it's just water, caffeine, and carbonation. That's it. It doesn't have like sodium, doesn't have anything else. I throw those the fuck back right now.
Wow.
And that keeps me going. But it just tastes like a flat soda, but I like that it literally just is water with caffeine.
Beautiful, man. I'm not even going to address these allegations in the death metal community that I threw back a 5-hour energy drink and took 2 bong hits of the La Bamba strain of New York legal weed right before I pressed record on this podcast. I don't know where people get these ideas, but good for you. I'm glad you found something that works for you, man. I'm feeling good right now. That being said, it snowed today here in the New York area, the central New York City and the suburbs outside of it, New Jersey. Everybody got a little taste of the old snow today, man. Your kids were off of school probably, right?
They were off of school. One of them's sick, but it's nice because I'm off of work with, you know, the new baby. So
yeah.
I was able to, like, the moment it stopped around 2 p.m. Eastern today, got out there, shoveled all our shit up, made everything nice. And then me and the middle one built a snowman. I haven't done that in years because we haven't had enough snow to really get like a nice snowman. But we have a quality snowman out there right now.
That's good. Yeah, I was thinking for my nephew, man. It's probably the first real snow day. I remember when I was a kid, we used to get a little bit more snow. We had some brutal snowstorm right up until probably 10 or 15 years ago. It seemed like a slowdown, man. I don't know if Immortal had something to do with that. We'll see, you know, but it was weird. And, you know, there's a, I had a thing happen today. Let me know, because you're out here in the suburbs. This is a big thing in the suburbs. People who put the snow out in the street in a manner where the snow plows will then come by and push their snow into the neighbor's driveway area. It's like, you know what I'm saying? It's a very, it's a disrespect. It's a line people cross. That happened to me today. Neighbor put the snow out right in the street, and then the plow came by, and I had an ugly visceral reaction, man. But then I remember, you know, many years ago, 2 years before my father passed away, he was in his late 70s. He was having a little trouble getting around, and he refused to hang up the shovel. It snowed, and he was out. I was like, hey, slow down, guy. And he was out there trying to shovel snow with me. And a guy, a volunteer firefighter, was out there with like a bobcat thing, you know, moving the snow down the block or something. I don't know what was going on. And the guy put the snow out in the street, and my dad in his like late 70s hobbled down there with a snow shovel and threatened the guy. He threatened him. My dad retired like 15 or 20 years prior to this, and he threatened him with his local. I don't want to say the local number, but he threatened him with his old union. He, like, it was a gang.
I'm not even kidding. When you started saying that, I, for one, know exactly what you're fucking talking about. My neighbors suck. I hope they all die. I hate them so much. Props to your dad. He sounds like the man, because I would have done a very similar move there on just the way to address said neighbor. But that's what you got to do. You got to throw the local out there. This is New York, you know, Jersey, suburb. You got to like throw some weight around, like throw like, you know, almost like a soprano scene. Like somebody's going to come and fucking give you what's coming to you. Cause that sucks. I hate it when the landscapers do it too, with like, when they're pushing like dirt and like leaves around and shit, and they just like blow it into the street right in front of your house. Same shit. Not cool. Not cool at all.
The suburban landscaping culture is very Long Island. Very Long Island, man. I remember it took me very late in life to realize this is how, this is like the American in me, all right? It took me very late in life to realize that there are people who didn't grow up with snow. Because I was so bubble-headed in my own little world, man. You know, and you know, you meet people from different. I work with a lot of people who grew up in warmer climates and moved to this country and things like that, and didn't see snow till they were in their 20s and 30s. And it's, you know, it's like I'm, you know, I was my own ignorant assumption. But you know, growing up with snow days as part of the regular school year, man, very fortunate. I look back and I'm very glad for that, man.
Well, not to belabor, you know, this combo too much, but. That's what sucks now, man, with the kids. They don't really get traditional snow days anymore. Luckily, my son was sick, so he took, like, a sick day, too, my oldest. But they send him home with, like, fucking laptops and stuff now. And they're like, your snow day? Nope, you're doing shit at home. So,
ew.
Yeah, crazy.
Ew. That's gross. I remember snow days where school would get canceled for multiple days because it was like a blizzard. You know what I mean? It was ridiculous, man. I see you there with the Necrot hat because your kids were home. You're trying to relate to the modern youth culture. That's good, man. Shout out to Necrot. Shout out to Scotty Heath and Tank Crimes Records. We interviewed him a few weeks ago, man.
I actually was going to say, too, man, like, I've been from afar enjoying so much of what you guys have done at the top of the year right now with everything that's come out. So I have to listen to the Tank Crimes one. That tour, I think there's a Tank Crimes kind of base tour, because don't they have Ghoul too, right? They have Ghoul on there?
Ghoul, Municipal Waste, and Necrot.
Waste is on Tank Crimes?
They may have outgrown, I guess, so to speak, that label, but there's a heavy connection there. I'd have to go to Metal Archives right now.
That would make sense, because I know Morbican is on Tank Crimes, and I know that's like Phil. But that tour is happening right now. You guys have done such timely stuff, because that, I think, is coming literally, I don't know when this is dropping, but I think February 17th, like Necrot, Municipal Waste, Ghoul are doing their New York leg of the current tour they're on. Yeah. But I have to listen to that episode. I did listen to the one with Jim from Morgul Blade. I dig Morgul Blade, actually. Then I listened to the one with Mike from Tombs. But I got to get on the last one you put out, the Catacomb Records. I haven't listened to that yet, and I'm not too familiar with them and him. So I'm really looking forward to everything that you guys have been dropping.
I love all of our guests. Don't get me wrong. I don't play favorites. It's like you're trying to play your favorite kids or something like that. But at the same time, Tim Wright of Catacomb Records, the record store in Dayton, Ohio. I just happened to start seeing them pop up on my Instagram feed, and they were doing some real cool stuff as specifically a metal record store, not a record store with a metal section, but a specialty metal record store. And I said, let me reach out. And that guy gave me some of the most interesting stories of record collecting I've ever heard or had on this podcast. So yeah, definitely check that out. I don't want to elaborate too much. I just want to give people that little lead in. But listen, man, you know, we're talking about me being ignorant and living in a bubble and not being aware of the way people grow up in other countries. Do they get snow in Australia?
So I have cousins of cousins that lived in Australia.
Yeah.
And growing up, we would see them once a year. I don't fucking know. All I remember is it blew my mind when I was like 7, and they were explaining to me how their summer vacation was during our winter, because like that's when the fucking summer seasonality is for them. And when they were explaining, they celebrated Christmas during their summer vacation. I was like, what the fuck are you talking? Like, you guys are idiots. I didn't get it at all. So that was a long way to say, I don't know if they get snow.
All right.
But they probably don't know what to fucking do with it, even if they do have snow, you know?
Well, listen, I know just the guys to call and ask, all right? And I know a guy who also spends his days in Australia and makes a little pilgrimage to the New York area himself every once now again. And another guy who knows more about upstate New York death metal than anybody on this podcast, apparently, even though he's from a far, far away land. Let's get DeliQuest on the line from Australia, man. One of the brightest, new, brutal, I'll say New York-styled death metal bands out there. Hit him up. DeliQuest. Yeah. check, check. This is Big Will from the Heavy Hole Podcast, and today I'm joined by the entire band. Oh, no, I fucked it up already. Hold on a second, because there's one more question I forgot to ask. You guys are... This is Big Will from the Heavy Hole Podcast, and I'm here with the band Deliquest out of Melbourne, Australia. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us, thanks.
Of course, man. I'm glad we could set this up. It's about 6:30 p.m. for me on a Friday night and about 10:30 a.m. for you guys on a Saturday morning. Glad we could all convene like this. And just for the listeners, you guys have dropped one of the best, I'm going to say, New York-style death metal albums, if that's a subgenre, of the last year on Days Records in the form of your album Cursed with Malevolence. We're going to get into that, the history of the band, some of you guys' other projects, and everything along the way. But as I always do, I'm going to start out by asking you guys some preliminary questions about your upbringing, especially in terms of music. So just starting, Rick. Rick, the drummer. Are you from a musical family? Was there anyone older than yourself who played an instrument or steered your way into hard rock and heavy metal growing up?
There was not. I basically just got into music on my own accord. Probably the first band I played drums for in terms of like death metal or slam was called Opal Stench back in Christchurch, New Zealand. The band lasted a few years, and during the time playing with Opal Stench, I started another band playing guitar called Odious and Bell. And that band has been going on and off since around 2002 and is still active, semi-retired and active at the moment. And apart from that, man, I got back into drums in the last few years. Me and Adrian had another couple of projects prior to Deliquest and started jamming Deliquest in late 2019. So yeah, that's pretty much it, man.
Okay. Quick question. Odious and Bowel, I am very familiar with. I remember, I think there was a demo or an EP that was dropped maybe 2 or 3 years ago. But that band is from New Zealand and then is listed as relocating to Australia. Are you, like, could you just, like, clarify that a little bit, how that goes?
Okay, so, yeah, the band started in New Zealand in 2002 and we relocated to Melbourne, Australia in 2007.
Okay, and so you're originally from New Zealand.
That's correct. Yeah.
I'm not a well-educated man. I'm from New York here in the United States. What is the relationship between New Zealand and Australia? Is there a lot of back and forth and cross migration for different jobs and things like, or is this more of a random thing? So,
a lot of New Zealand people move to Australia due to like the fact that it's high-paying jobs. And New Zealand's pretty isolated. It's a nice place to live, but it's a bit harder to get by. Obviously, there's quite a bigger music scene in Melbourne, Australia especially. So we just needed a change, and with Odious and Bell, the drummer moved here a few years prior to me, and I decided to continue the band over in Australia.
Okay, man, fair enough. So what is your first instrument? Because you play guitar and drums. As a kid, what's the first one you pick up?
It was guitar, and I... But then at the same time, I was, you know, dabbling with bass guitar and drums as well.
And when does your interest in music turn to things like death metal and grindcore that are less readily accessible?
That was around the age of 15. I started getting into bands like Cannibal Corpse, Suffocation, Dying Fetus, Skinless. And then just, you know, ended up being into more underground bands, you know, for the Relapse catalog. Obviously, a lot of New York death metal. Yeah, just basically trying to find anything, you know, interesting or unique and heavy. Yeah, man, just ended up just getting into more underground stuff over the years.
Okay, fair enough, man. And coming from New Zealand and then moving to Australia, what would you say about like the accessibility of this type of music, the scene, the availability of seeing it live, the availability of people to jam with?
Well, living in a place like Melbourne, man, it's a pretty healthy scene here. There's a lot of live venues. There's a shit ton of bands. There's a lot of shows happening. Whereas in New Zealand, it's, you know, you have a show usually once every couple of months. And it's, you know, there's more of a build up for that show rather than here. It's sort of like, it's every sort of, you know, there might be multiple shows on the same night. It's just a bigger population, man, in Australia. So there's a lot more going on, especially in a place like Melbourne, Australia, especially.
Sounds similar to why some people move to the bigger cities here in the States, too, in terms of the music scenes and jobs and stuff. All right, yep. So we'll catch up to you, man. Adrian, guitarist of Deliquest, same line of questioning, musical family, anyone older than yourself that steered you towards instruments and playing hard rock, heavy metal, in your growing up, that sort of thing?
Non-musical, really. I guess... I could kind of credit it to my dad and his uncle. Just, they, you know, they were into like the whole, they had a bunch of rock CDs and vinyls and stuff, but they never played any instruments. So I picked that up by myself pretty much. There is a cousin that I have that lives in Portugal, but I met him once and I know he plays in like a symphonic death metal band or something, but I have a lot of relatives over there, like, because my mum's Portuguese. But yeah, I've only met him like once when he was like, not even like maybe 11 years old. Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't know if you guys are familiar. I interviewed the band Toughness from Poland the other day. And
yeah.
one of them discovered as a teenager that what he thought was his normal everyday father had done like a symphonic metal zine in the 90s. So this idea of having like a random symphonic metal relative out there somewhere, it's kind of fun. Maybe I have a long lost symphonic metal cousin somewhere. I don't know. That's kind of cool though, man. You know, at least, you know, somewhere in the family, there's some other kind of metal. So
what? I know my uncle plays, he lives here, but I've only seen him pick up a guitar like a handful of times.
Okay. All right, man. That's interesting because you're in a number of projects. You're known for being a fairly prolific musician. What age do you pick up that guitar? And how does that come into play if it's not really a family thing? You know, like do you ask for it? Is it, you know, what's the deal with that?
I can't actually remember how I ended up with my first. I never really played it. I was like 4 years old. And, you know, I'll pick it up and just strum it and that'd be the end of it. I do specifically remember, well, from my dad's stories more so than anything, but air guitaring to a lot of, like, Hotel California and that sort of thing on happening on his CDs, on his stereo. But what was the actual question?
Oh, well, I was just trying to get a feel for your early days in music. And so eventually though, like I asked, Rick before, when does your taste in music take a turn for the more extreme and underground and like, how does that kind of happen for you? You know, just in terms of discovering like the underground music and the more extreme music.
I think at around 10 years old, I heard, the Metallica, Megadeth, all that, I discovered that stuff on my cousin's iPod. And then after that, I was just like, oh, what's that sound? And told my parents I want a guitar. Yeah, happened pretty quickly after that.
And then you just
so
kind of...
10 years old, I'd say I started playing guitar.
Okay, and then after that, you kind of just went down that wormhole further of heavy music like most people?
Yeah. I got into the heavier side maybe pretty early, man. I'd say like 12, 13 years old, I heard like the Cannibal Corpse, Suffocation, just on my own for some reason. I was just scrolling YouTube or something and then, yeah, just got obsessed straight away.
Okay, man. And you are in a number of projects that we'll talk about. Are you originally from Melbourne?
Yeah, I've always lived here. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna pause it there for you for one moment, and I'm gonna go to James, vocalist of Deliquest. James, same line of questioning. Are you from a musical family? Anyone that steered your interest in hard rock or heavy metal music growing up, or anything like that?
Not really from a musical family. My dad always sort of he introduced me to bands like Midnight Oil, a lot of Aussie rock, like Skyhooks, Split Ends and stuff like that. So I think that was sort of when I was a kid, that's what I was brought up on, and like stuff like AC/DC and Metallica and stuff like that. And then my uncle used to be a jeweler and a tattooist, and he was mates with a band from Australia called Mindsnare. And he used to go to shows and stuff, and him and one of my dad's friends from work who played in bands in Australia, they gave us like a hard drive, and it had basically Cryptopsy, like Cannibal Corpse, all real weird, obscure Australian like grindcore and death metal bands. Like most of these things were like demos that you would never find. Like you would never find any of this stuff. So I kind of got, like, I was already starting to listen to stuff at a pretty early age. But then I know I've always been the sort of person that when I find something, I need to dig. I need to know more. And that basically, when I got all this stuff, I'm like, who are these people? Who are these bands? So I had to, like, find out more. And that's where it sort of turned into more of, like, an obsession. Plus, everyone I grew up with in my area was either in bands or like listen to like heavy music and stuff like that.
And what area was that you grew up in?
So it's the south of Melbourne. So down Frankston line. It's weird for me because I come from, like, you know, friends listening to death metal and hardcore punk and stuff like that. But I also come from hip hop and stuff at the same time, because I grew up around a lot of my friends back in the day, and still to this day, were all graffiti artists and stuff like that. So I used to hang out, go to like hip hop shows, but I'd also go to death metal. So it was just always a mixture. Like it was never one thing.
Yeah, I saw you have an Instagram, Melbourne Murder Designs, if I got that right. And I saw that you have an interest in graffiti and design in general. I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. So is there, were you part of a culture in growing up there that, you know, where it was like, you know, street tagging like we think of, and, you know, people running around at night at train yards or whatever the equivalent would be?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's why. Well, the line, specifically the line I come from in the 90s, it was very, I would say it was very drug based. A lot of my friends aren't around anymore. Like heroin was real bad in my area. And I grew up with a lot of older people. Like I've got a younger brother who goes to shows and does all that stuff too. Doesn't play in bands. But he grew up with me, and we grew up around all this stuff. So I was out painting like all the time. Like I'd be going to shows, but then I'd be out doing graffiti. Like I never really thought that I was going to have a design page and be doing logos for bands. That was never the thing in my brain. It was that I was probably eventually going to get arrested. Mm. It wasn't that I was going to make money off it.
That's something I wanted to ask you about. What are the legal penalties in terms of doing time and getting arrested and that sort of thing, like where you're from? Because, you know, I'm from the suburbs outside of New York City here, and it's a very serious thing. A lot of people have traditionally been injured, even killed while trying to get up somewhere. And, you know, there's also the cops have traditionally never appreciated it, but there was many times, you know, there's stories about people getting beat up by cops, locked up, and it's treated as a very serious thing, you know, depending on the situation here. Well, I want to know what it's like for over there.
It's a very similar thing here. It just depends. It's over the years, it's gotten a lot less. Like, it just depends where, like, it used to be a lot more violent, and there was a lot more behind closed doors sort of stuff. Whereas nowadays, everything's filmed, so you can't really do the stuff. Like I have friends, because I'm in a graffiti crew in New York. I'm also affiliated with a New York graffiti crew. And I've got friends, like one of my friends is pretty up in New York. He writes What KH. He's up like basically everywhere up Coney Island and stuff like that. And I've got a few other friends from over there, like dudes in a crew called VD and stuff from Long Island and stuff like that. Like, but yeah, I sort of just bounce around like with that stuff. But yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Death metal and like graffiti sort of in some aspects go hand in hand, because there's a lot of dudes that are in the death metal scene that are graffiti artists, but you would never really know. And it's really weird in Melbourne. Like, you always just find them.
Yeah, I don't want to blow up any spots, but you definitely had one of them collaborate on a song, who I know personally. And that's the thing. I don't want to incriminate anyone or blow up any spots. I'm familiar with the nature of the graffiti world in that regard. But I got to ask, how does somebody who's from Australia get down with a graffiti crew based out of where I'm from, Long Island and New York? Like, is it similar to the underground metal scene in some way like that, where people network?
Yeah, it's exactly. It's networking, you know. You meet people and you have like-minded interests and stuff like that. Like, I got hit up and asked by certain people from over there because they saw what I was doing and they really like fucked with what I was doing, which is cool. Like, you know, it's like a mutual respect sort of thing.
Would you say that those experiences and interacting with people from the graffiti world in New York has somehow informed the attitude of the band, being that you're more of a New York death metal styled band?
Not really. Like, I think, like, I'm always, like, it's funny, I'm always going to be pigeonholed because I come from hardcore originally. Like, I played in another band before this, and, you know, I always see what, like, certain people comment online, because some elitists don't really like my vocals, which is okay for them. They can live with that. It's not my issue. But, like, you know, it's always like the New York sound is what I've always sort of stuck to. That's what I sort of found pretty early. And like bands like Cerebral Hemorrhage and like Tomorrow's Victim and like Revenants and like Without Remorse and stuff like that. That was always my thing. Like, that was like Partisan Turbine, like just, like stuff that was just so heavy was just what I wanted. Like,
not only that, I think all of us have, like, I mean, you got all like the well-known classic bands that we love are from there, like, you know, Suffocation, Malignancy, Immolation, all that, the top, you know, death metal bands.
I'm glad to hear you say it, because I don't want to say it. I'll sound a little bit pompous maybe because it's my backyard. But those are all people I grew up looking up to and being inspired by. So fair enough. And I had to laugh before because you mentioned Cerebral Hemorrhage and Tomorrow's Victim. I love all those guys. Matty Death, an old friend of mine. So I love hearing those bands brought up. We did a whole episode with him, and we've had other members of those bands on the shows. But Armando, I didn't forget about you. I just kind of got sidetracked with that whole graffiti talk. That's something that's an interest of mine. Thank you for your patience. And same line of questioning for you. Are you from a musical family, and was there anyone who steered your interest in playing music and maybe heavy metal growing up?
Yeah, there's not a musical bone in my family. No one really plays music in my family at all. I mean, my dad, when I was younger, he worked a lot, but he would sometimes, like, I would listen to, like, Metallica, Van Halen, Motley Crue, AC/DC, Megadeth, Slayer, like, all stuff. He was right into the thrash stuff when he was younger, because he was growing up with that scene. Granted, I don't know what it was down here, but he heard a lot of those bands back in the 80s and 90s. But then when I was a kid, I wanted to be a DJ. I wanted to make dubstep, if you remember that. Mm-hmm. I was not into metal at all. I from like age 6 to age, I think, 12, I was right into making. And I didn't have any of the gear for it, but I wanted to do it. I liked Skrillex quite a lot. I liked Deadmau5 quite a lot. I wanted to make that kind of stuff. But I also wanted to play guitar. So I picked up a guitar at, like, I don't know, age 11 or something. And then I just didn't like it. I just wanted to play an instrument because it looked cool. And I was like, nah, fuck this. This is not Like, I wasn't getting it. And for years and years, I kept taking lessons. My fucking poor parents kept shelling out money for lessons, and I just never did anything with it until I was about 14, and I got into, you know, the band Gorillaz. So they're not a metal band or anything, but
the rap group, the big band, the big group, right?
Yeah. I got into them, and they have a lot of bass lines, more bass lines than guitar lines that are cool. But I started picking up guitar because I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I actually have a guitar here, I can learn that. And then I picked up bass at the same time, and I just learned the two of them side by side, and I just went from there. And then around late, like 14 and a half, 15, my mate got into like a lot of metalcore, and I was getting into metalcore around the same time, just getting back into also the old heavy metal my dad would listen to. And we just started getting into metal from there. And my other friends got into metal, so there was like four of us, and we were the only people that we knew who liked metal, like anywhere. And we were listening to more like You Bring Me the Horizons, Your Architects, you know, those kind of like metalcore and like deathcore bands. We were massively into deathcore. And I just got the, I was kind of like James, where I had to dig, I had to find more people that I liked. And I just kept finding more bands that I liked until like, yeah, it was like an obsession. I just kept like listening to these bands. I wouldn't even know if they were good or not. I just look at the album cover and go, sick, all right, we're going to listen to this band today. And they may have been shit, but yeah, I just got right into it. I don't know what it was about it. But yeah, it's funny not coming from a metal background or a music background at all and going right into this stuff.
Yeah, I know the obsession you're describing very well. It's right behind me, and it doesn't stop for some people anyway. And if it stops for one of your friends, you can just inherit some of their collection, man. It's all good. All right, man. So I know you guys, most of you guys are involved in other projects and other bands. Can you guys tell me a little bit? I don't know who wants to take the lead on this, but how does Deliquest in particular come together? And form, I think it's probably around what, 2019, 2020?
Yeah, sounds about right. The
late 2019.
Late 19, yeah. What happened? Ricky and I were playing together in like, we've played in maybe three other bands together. But I was swapping around from, I was playing drums for a little bit. He was playing guitar. And then at one point I just decided I want to go back on guitar and he was going to try out drums again after something so like 10 years. Formed,
man, I hadn't played drums for about 10 years. I was basically focused, on Odious and Val and playing guitar. And me and Adrian, we were kind of living pretty, you know, in close proximity to each other and hanging out, drinking beer a lot. And Deliquest basically started as a way for us to kill time. And we had a practice room set up at my old flat. And I jumped on drums one day and we had a vision of creating a band that had, you know, a sound similar to Pierce from Within along those lines, man. And just heavy groove and lots of riffing. And yeah, just sort of, we weren't really expecting it to go anywhere. And then we recorded our first EP, Engineered Frailty, and got a pretty good response from it, man. So decided, you know, take it further.
Okay. And that was, it sounds like everyone was on the same page. One of my questions was going to be, was there maybe one band member who wasn't as familiar with the classic New York style of bands? I mean, I'm sure everyone knows Suffocation. That's an international band. But, you know, James mentioned Cerebral Hemorrhage and Tomorrow's Victim before. Was there anyone who kind of like along the journey of Deliquest got the deep dive of New York death metal too and discovered this subgenre a little bit more?
That would probably be Amanda when he joined, but he joined, when was that, 2020?
I joined 2022. I joined 2022. The start of 2022.
Oh, yes, 2 years, 2 years ago to the day, yeah, almost.
It's almost to the day that I joined the band. But I was well into New York death metal, like just death metal in general by that point. Like, but I didn't know the ins and outs, like what James, like all the bands James listed. I didn't know any of that shit. I just knew like the big ones.
But that's not your fault. That's because I'm afraid.
For me personally, man, my taste in New York death metal would be more upstate. That's like the Torture, Organ Harvest, Wasteform,
Traumacide.
That was a heavy influence for me as a teenager. So yeah, man, that's kind of what really got me started on that sort of style.
Upstate New York. I'm sorry, if I could ask you again, just one time, just a little bit slower to list out those upstate bands again.
Okay, so Organ Harvest, Mucopus,
Organ
Trauma
Harvest,
Spine.
Mucopus, I know. And I'm sorry, what was that?
For Torture. Yeah, man, Wasteful, that I said every. Just a bunch of those underground bands.
Okay, okay.
Basically in the MySpace years, man. I
Yeah.
was picking up on all that stuff.
Yeah, one of my I have a rotating cast of co-hosts, friends of mine and bandmates of mine that come on and do the introduction and the outro of the show. And lately my friend Dave Gladding has been doing a recurring segment where we rehash some very old school upstate New York death metal, because upstate New York was a whole similar but separate and well-established scene aside from New York City and Long Island, downstate New York. And you just listed like three bands that we haven't brought up on that segment yet. So we'll definitely get, give you guys credit when we talk about those in the future. Because you're absolutely right. Coming from Long Island, Suffocation, Internal Bleeding, Pyrexia, and so on and so forth were like, the planets rotating around your death metal mind. But we forget about upstate. There were so many good bands, Disgorged, and a lot of bands that I bring up on the podcast from time to time. So that's cool to hear you say that. And me, I'm over here asking you guys what's the connection with New Zealand and Australia. You're over there picking apart the finer points of like New York State death metal. So I got to do my homework over here. That's cool though, man. And it's interesting to me to see how this New York death metal thing has become its own, I guess, subgenre along the way. So you guys do that, and I know that was obviously during the pandemic period. There's lockdowns. Venues aren't able to operate. I think, wasn't it true? I was looking on your social media. You guys had a little bit of a bumpy start with some of your bookings, trying to get
Oh,
out there, right?
yeah. Every show we planned to play at the start all got cancelled, whether it be lockdown in Melbourne or lockdown in the other state. So yeah, we and those would have been good shows. Like those would have been pretty good first shows to play, but we sort of win some,
There was
lose
only two or three, really.
some.
Like we didn't have much planned, I would say.
I mean, our first show, from what I understand, I wasn't yet there when it was booked, but was pushed back like nearly 2 years. Like it was planned to be 2020, right? And it got pushed back to April 2022. It just kept getting pushed back.
People just kept getting COVID.
Tough time for live music, man. We were navigating that ourselves. But you guys did eventually get out. You played some notable shows. I know you've supported Cruelty from Japan, Cruelty with a K, and Defeated Sanity, right?
Our second show was with Defeated Sanity.
It's Defeated Sanity in New
Amazing.
Zealand.
Yeah, you guys are definitely a band that I would love to see on a bill with Defeated Sanity. And what? Here's something I want to ask. Have you guys played around? I know. Well, you did do an Australian tour last summer, no?
No, 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 no.
Okay.
No, I mean, we've probably played less than 10 shows, honestly.
Yeah,
we
Maybe the
haven't played that.
flyer I saw was you guys supporting another band's Australian tour. I think I saw a flyer and misread it then. Well, that still leads to my question though, because I've never been to Australia. What would it be like? What would it entail for you guys to do an Australian tour? I know the cities are kind of far and few between. There's like a lot of long distance travels, or no?
Yeah, you'd have to you could probably drive it, but it would be like a pretty big endeavor to do an
The
Australian tour.
shortest drive is pretty much something like 8 hours,
Yeah,
nine
to
hours.
Adelaide's about it. Is it Adelaide?
Yeah, Adelaide.
Yeah, Adelaide's probably the closest city you'd want to hit, I'd say.
All right,
But
so
that, I think that's the problem with it.
flying is like 1 hour. But yeah, different expense, I guess.
Yeah, probably a lot more expensive, I would imagine. That yeah, it's interesting, man, because yeah, like I said, I've never been. And then what about, I mean, at that point then, is there other countries that might be in some way easier to get to play a one-off show outside of Australia?
Well, if you look at something like Perth, that's what, how far is that? That's like a
Perth,
6 hour
yeah.
flight or
Okay.
something, but it's really expensive. So a lot of bands that come here don't go there,
Yeah.
which is a shame because
Perth has a good
it's
music
a,
scene.
it's a, yeah, it's got a great scene. But I don't know. It's just so far. Like sometimes you're better off going to somewhere in Asia, you know, or New Zealand's only like 3 hours flying as well. So
it can be hard for bands. I was talking to someone about this the other day, just comparing bands touring overseas and stuff. And I was saying that bands in the States and like in Europe and stuff, you could have a show and you could have like 30 plus shows on your tour, but if you do a tour in Australia, you can only have like a certain amount, and the only way to bump it up is if you do regional areas that are like in country towns in the middle of nowhere. And a lot of them used to have a pretty heavy music scenes, but you're not always guaranteed that the show's going to go well. And that's the problem with Australia. Like even some of the biggest bands in Australia, they'll do an Australian tour and then they spend the rest of the next year or two just traveling around the world because they don't stay here. They just always want to like do more. And that's just sort of what we have to like, that's what we deal with here.
Okay, fair enough. I've seen routing for Australian tours, and I've heard stories from musicians who've traveled down there. I just wanted to get your guys' perspective as a band kind of still starting out and with that ahead of them. It could be a little daunting, the logistics of it. But I do know you guys are scheduled, if I'm not mistaken on this one, for the Ungrateful Dead Fest in New Zealand, the July of this year?
Yeah, but it's in Melbourne. It's
only here. It's down here. The road.
It's like a couple 20 minutes down the road.
It's our version of a US death metal fest.
Like, yeah, like Texas.
All right. Ask the other guests. I usually get the research better than this. All right. It's definitely not New Zealand. It's in Australia. I apologize. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I was smoking something while I was looking on your Instagram, taking my notes before. But the Ungrateful Dead Fest in Australia.
It looks like in the US for sure. But there's not, I mean, there has been a few of those sorts of, you know, the brutal death metal bands around here, but a lot of them have died off. Actually, that's the funny thing. Like, some of the bands that are playing that are coming back to play that show. I don't know if they're going to continue afterwards, but I hope so.
Yeah, one band being Seminal Environment from Adelaide, a really good band. And I think I've had about, 4 years off playing live shows?
At least
6 years, yeah.
I'm no expert on Australian death metal. I actually think I'd probably know more grindcore and gore grind bands from the 90s than anything. But I know there's one band I've are you guys familiar with Abramelin? I imagine some of you guys that's an Australian band that plays a more brutal style of death metal that's been around for a long time. Are they still around?
They came back about 6 years ago.
Okay.
They're still
with David Haley on drums from Psycroptic.
Yeah, Psycroptic too. A guy I know from the local scene here in New York, Todd Stern, was playing with Psycroptic. I think still is for a while. Yeah. Good guy. All right, so interesting stuff. So at this point then, man, let me not botch the next plug for something you got coming up. What are there any other shows booked that you guys would like to plug and promote coming up now for listeners that may be in the area?
We got two coming up, but they're not announced yet, so I don't know.
Okay, so we'll just tell people to follow your social media and pay attention.
That's it. Honestly, there's just one that's out there for everybody to know about. That's the one you just mentioned, Ungrateful Dead Fest.
The other ones are pretty cool.
But I think we'll say that. Like, very, very nice. Very nice shows.
Fair enough. Like I always say, we're going to tell people to follow you guys on social media. One other question, though. How'd you guys hook up with Days Records?
So that'd be me. I designed the Days logo, the little Romac, but his character, that's mine. Lumpy's a old friend of mine. I met him. I travel a lot. At one point, I'd probably spend more time overseas than I had in actual Australia, going all over Europe and then going all over America. I stayed I was over for, I can't remember what it was for. It was the first time I was in the States, I think. And I stayed at this guy that I used to buy stuff off back in the day from Pittsburgh, AJ, that runs Preserving Hardcore, the museum in Pittsburgh. AJ is a really close mate of mine. I stayed on his floor at his house, and there was a show called Brick by Brick in Altoona, and Sanction were playing, and they stayed at his house also. And I met him, and I also met my friend, my real close friend now, Nick, who plays in Vomit Fourth on drums.
Good guy. He's one of my good closest people.
Friends now.
Good people, yeah.
And then from there, like, we've been in contact. We've caught up. Like, I went to Internal Bleeding and Crowbar at Amityville with those boys. We caught up and we went out and went and saw that. That was pretty crazy. Like, we played, because they wanted to play with my old band, Ex-Carnate, but we're on a permanent hiatus sort of at the moment. It could have come back at any time, but there's a few things that need to be sorted. But he was like, oh, I want to play with Deliquest. So we played with Sanction, and him and the other band members were basically in awe. He filmed our whole set, and then for that next year, he listened to the live videos because our music wasn't released. And then when I offered, I said to him, oh, what's your thoughts on, would that, he was basically jumped at it. Like, he, because this is what he grew up on, like, being from Long Island and stuff like that. Like, so it was pretty cool to have, like, you know, the first Australian band on his label and sort of the first death metal band on his label.
Mm. I want to, you know, I don't want to, like, do direct comparisons and
death metal band on there.
I'm sorry?
A lot of people get confused when they say a death metal band on his label, but.
But it works. It works. The style you guys are doing, it totally works. It makes complete sense. The whole New York thing. And it's like you guys aren't just. And not that there's anything wrong if there is a band that's just playing New York-style death metal. There's, like, some kind of Long Island, New York thing in the DNA of the band at that point. I mean, you're talking about going to Amityville Music Hall and seeing Internal Bleeding, hanging out with Nick from... Shout out to Nick. We did a whole episode a few years ago with Nick from Vomit Fourth. Great guy. Long Island guy. Yes, I mean, this is like a Long Island, New York, you know, infused band. And I don't want, I part of me doesn't want to say this because maybe it's corny, but in the late 90s, when the idea of a New York style death metal band that wasn't from New York was kind of a more alien concept, it hadn't really been. Vomit Remnants from Japan came out, and I said, I said, holy shit, they got, you know, these guys are like you could see in the band pictures, the clothes they wear, the samples they used, everything was New York style, everything was East Coast style, you know what I mean? And I said, this band, it has it in their DNA. They're not just doing a Suffocation style album. And I kind of get that vibe from you guys, you know, the graffiti, the association with hardcore, it all works, you know. I get it on that note of you guys being the only death metal band on the label. Like, it just, there's something in there that kind of just, you know, it works, man.
Some sort of crossover that's easy to see.
I don't think it's so much intentional though. It's sort of just how it came out, really.
It's just all of our different interests, and I think that we sort of meshed everything really well. Like, we didn't want to sound like we had ideas of bands that we liked, but the whole thing wasn't to just sound like someone else. But I think our different interests sort of came out in the music.
Absolutely. It's got a very original sound. You know, I would say, I think you guys definitely wear some of your influences on your sleeve. I think for people who have a lot of experience with New York style death metal, they might get some of the references, but that's not to say that you guys have your own personality and inject your own thing there. Now, I know on your Engineered Frailty EP in 2020, Armando, you weren't in the band yet at that point, right?
No, I was 16. I was still in school.
All right, man. Fair enough. You come in and you're on the album now. The bass, the sound of the bass is a very essential part of this style. You know what I mean? Were you attuned to death metal that had this kind of bass? Did you, you know, like the idea, did you kind of like study some albums from this style? I just want to know how that kind of comes into play, because it's very, everything is spot on with what you guys are doing. That's the thing. You're not necessarily copying New York bands, but it's spot on for the technique.
Yeah, I really liked a lot of death metal bands that had like present bass in the mix, not just like the pretty almost DI tone a lot of bands had. So like I really love Cryptopsy, like early Cryptopsy.
Yeah.
And yeah. None So Vile, I think, has the best bass tone they ever had. Like maybe Whisper as well. I just love that. I know it's not New York at all, but like that death metal, that bass tone was sick to me. Breeding the Spawn is my favorite Sufferer album, and the bass is pretty present on that. And then I just really like that kind of clicky Tomb of the Mutilated time that like Alex Webster had at the time. So I guess I just kind of, I liked that because it was, you know, like the modern metal bass tone is like pretty, like it's pretty clanky, but I like how it originally sounded where it was clanky, but it wasn't super like over distorted. It was very just present, I guess. Like I'm hitting the bass really fucking hard to get
the bass should have more mids than the guitars. Yeah, the guitar. Always.
Yeah. Like Deprecated, for example, has like Derek Boyer type tone. That's another really sick band that I really liked. And then I guess it's not New York at all, but like Defeated Sanity is my favorite band. And like the bass tone in that's pretty present as well. It's not as the bass tone that I had on this, but it's very much the way I play is a lot ripped from Jacob. So
we claim Defeated Sanity and None So Vile era Cryptopsy in New York anyway, so it's fine. All right, I want to go around to you guys, the rest of you guys, with this kind of line of question. Rick, in terms of drumming, are there any New York bands, New York drummers in particular that stand out to you as an inspiration or kind of like an example?
Yeah, man, like Doug Bone, Peter from Within, obviously go. Mike Smith, and Bob Bodilac from Skinless.
Yeah, undercredited guy, I think, Bob.
Anyway, man. Probably my most listened to death metal album of all time would be Progression Towards Evil.
Wow.
These guys don't give me shit about it, but it's something I like just was heavily influenced by as a teenager, man. And was lucky enough to bring them out to New Zealand in 2006. And we, Odious and Bell, played a few New Zealand shows with them. We did a Melbourne show as well.
Yeah, great band. We've had Sherwood on a long time ago, man. Shout out to him. It's cool to hear Bob being brought up too, because Skinless, they were more of an upstate band, but they nailed it. I used to see them around when they first started out, really. Moving along, James, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you up front. There's something in your vocal style that evokes sometimes. You have a range, but there is sometimes where you evoke Mike DeSalvo from Whisper Supremacy era Cryptopsy and Keith DeVito, who's been in all three of the major Long Island bands before. I just wanted to get your impression if those guys, if I'm spot on, if those guys are big for you, and you know what some of your other ideas about New York vocalists are.
Yeah, that's pretty spot on. Like it's always cool to hear people sort of, like I've had a few people say things to me and nail sort of like where I gain influence from. Like a lot of my influence is from like, I would say New York, Long Island sort of bands, because that sort of, when I sort of found the music that I liked, I sort of went through like, you know, Internal Bleeding's like a really, that's another band that I really like. And like, just, it's not always the way that, for me, it's not always the way that the vocals sound. It's usually just the rhythm. A lot of it's the rhythm,
yeah,
and the way, the projection and stuff like that. Because like for me, like I'm always sort of pushing myself to be on it, like other stuff, like trying to learn just more ways of doing stuff that's more, I know, more erratic, like on vocals. So it's not always straightforward. It just jumps around. And I just, like there's so many vocalists that I like have seen over the years that have like given me a lot of inspiration. But there's so many to that.
Of course. Keith DeVito, I've always felt, is one of the most underrated vocalists in, if not New York death metal history. We have reached out. He's a very busy guy. Hopefully we could interview him one day. But as someone, I did a short stint singing doing session live vocals for Pyrexia for one tour. And I've been very honest on the podcast. It definitely wasn't my strong suit. I do a lot better with bands where I write the material, but learning some of Keith DeVito's parts were some of the most challenging vocal attempts and vocal takes of my life. Keith, if you listen and if you watch videos of Keith DeVito doing those Pyrexia songs, like Confrontation and those songs back in the day when they were new, it's really impressive, the breath control and the rhythm the guy had. I think, you know, a little bit overshadowed maybe by Frank Mullen and Frank Reaney and those guys.
I would say one of my, a big inspiration, and if he watches this, he'll just laugh at it, Mike from Dehumanized, who's a really close friend of mine. That Dehumanized was a very big influence on me growing up.
Yeah, me too, man. And I've seen them with several different singers over the years, and Mike really took command. And was able to own that material. I'll definitely give him that. Dehumanized, another great New York band. Moving along, Adrian, I think you're the last one for this kind of line of questioning. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but with the style of death metal, I imagine Terrence Hobbs obviously enters the equation. You can weigh in on that, and just if there's any other guitarists, songwriters, that sort of thing in this genre that you notice that shine to you a little bit.
Ron from Malignancy for sure.
Good one.
Who else can we name? Doug Cerrito was a big one, probably more so for me than Terrence Hobbs, but you know, same band, same flavors, I think. you've got Defeated Sanity. I've just always been drawn to like the spastic riffing, you know.
That's Ron from Malignancy. I love that guy, man. Good people. Ron's going to be playing with Pyrexia as their second guitarist coming up, I think, on a tour. I don't know that they've announced the dates, but Ron's going to be playing with them, which is very interesting. All right, guys. So I thank you very much for this discussion. You've been generous with your time. Right about now, I want to get to the point because there are four of you where you guys recommend some music for me. And obviously, I want to give you the opportunity to plug and promote anything else you got going on. I know you guys are in a lot of bands and projects all together. But for now, before we do the plugs and promotions at the end, let's start, Rick. I'm going to ask each of you guys just to recommend one older and one newer piece of music, whether it's metal or any other genre, a demo, an album, anything else, just something from back in the day and something a little bit more recent to recommend for people to check out.
Oh, man, something I've been jamming recently is a band called Balls Deep, another upstate New York band.
Composted?
A kind of wacky death metal style band. A couple of the guys have a new band called Horsegrave. And yeah, they're a pretty cool band. They haven't released any music yet, but it's pretty cool stuff, man. They've been playing a few shows. The stuff that I've heard from Horsegrave is sounding really good. So yeah, that's my recommendations.
Horsegrave. I love how my friend Dave and I have been trying to do this upstate New York recurring segment on the podcast. And in one interview, a guy from New Zealand who now lives in Australia has schooled us on upstate New York death metal. I wrote down all of that. We'll give you credit, man, but we're gonna have to research that in the coming weeks. Appreciate it.
Get us on it, and we can just tell you all the bands we know.
You know, we might have to, because again, like I said, most of you guys are in other projects that I also wanted to promote and plug. So we might have to arrange something where you guys come back. And we can also do kind of like more of a deep dive on New York death metal and talk the subject. But this, you know, this was a great introduction. And a lot of people in my area are very excited about your album. So we wanted to do this.
Thanks.
Of course. And as we move along, Adrian, you want to go next with something old and something new? No real strict rules, just recommending music.
All right. Something old. I'll start with Virulence, Conflict Scenario, I think it's called, the album.
Virulence.
They're fucking awesome. I only found them out, I found out about them this year, actually. But, yeah, very cool stuff. They got such a weird mix of styles. It's still, like, very death metal, hardcore-based, but there's, like, some black metal stuff in there. There's some jazz. It's really cool. For new stuff, maybe Paroxysm Unit from... I think they're an international band, actually. So you've got Colin Marston playing guitar. And the bass player from 7H Target from Russia. And I think the drummer is in Relics of Humanity. Is that right? Yeah. They're a really cool band.
Paroxysm.
They put out an album last year.
You said Paroxysm Unit.
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay, I know Colin, and it's hard to keep up with all of his projects and stuff. I gotta look up that that one, man. Good guy, Colin Marston. I actually, if I'm not mistaken, I believe he's working on a new album by a band that we've talked about a lot in this podcast. I don't want to spill the beans, but I know right now he's currently recording a band that we've held in high esteem. This whole conversation, people will find out eventually. All right.
You're not talking about Defeated Sanity, are you?
Have they talked about it on social media that they're using Colin?
Oh, yeah. They won't stop talking about it.
All right, okay, man. I can't keep up with everything, dude. You know, it's tough, and I don't want someone to be like, "Yo, Will, they haven't announced that yet, but I heard you say it on the podcast this week." I don't want one of those moments because we have spilled a few album, you know, names of albums and people joining bands over the years before we were supposed to. So, all right, fair enough. He's recording Defeated Sanity. The other day I asked him if he could do something for an upcoming thing of mine. He blew me off because he's like, "No, dude, recording Defeated Sanity right now." So, all right, fair enough, man. As we move along then, Armando, you want to take the next shot for something old and something a little bit newer?
Yeah, sure. Adrian took two of my picks. I would probably... Signs of Dying is an old band that I really like. They're really dead now. They did one album. Or I think it's a... Not an album, the one they did. They did an album and they did like an unreleased. I think it was a split that they never released, but the tracks are on YouTube and it's their best material to date. To date, I say, as if it wasn't 20 years ago, but it's still really cool.
Who was that? What was that?
Sign of Dying.
Sign of Dying?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then a new band, I really like Dead and Dripping, the one-man project. They put out an album last year that's like easily within my top three albums of the year. Like, it's so good. I just got it on CD the other day. Really like crazy kind of, I guess more crazy kind of death metal, like a la Defeated Sanity kind of, all over the place kind of stuff, but it's really cool.
All right, man. Fair enough, man. Something to look out for. Finally, I think, James, you're the last one for that question.
So many old bands as I could. That's a hard question for me because I'm a bit of an encyclopedia when it comes to things. But, like, if I had to pick one, I'd go... Revenance, Omen of Tragedy.
Wow.
That's probably one of like my favorite releases ever. If people haven't heard that, they really need to go and listen to it. And for a newer band, I'll go something local. I would say my brother's girlfriend's band, Threshold. They're metallic sort of hardcore, but it's really cool stuff. Like, it's a newer band that's just started with a bunch of my friends, and they're sort of already making pretty big moves. They played with Tsunami in the States recently when we were over there on holidays. They got to play with few bands out in, I guess it was like Berkeley, Oakland area, which was pretty cool. Like, you know, it's not many, they played with them and Speed. So it was like a cool little thing for an Australian band to get over there and do some stuff, but they are really cool. And Tanea is like one of probably the best female vocalists that Australia has at the moment. Like her projection and stuff for someone that hasn't been doing it that long is just insane.
Threshold?
Yeah, Threshold.
Okay, fair enough, man. We'll keep an eye out for that. Now, something I don't like to do is randomly ask about bands just because you guys are from the same region as them. But I'm gonna restrain myself. I'm just gonna throw out two names of ancient Australian grind bands that I used to follow in the 90s and see if there's any light bulbs that go off. And at least, if nothing else, the listeners could get a kick out of the name. Anybody remember Midget Fetish?
You stumped me then.
Yeah, you got me. Never...
And that's big. We get you. You get us. That's how it works, right?
Midget Fetish. I used to have a tape, and I think it got ruined in a basement flood many years ago because I didn't find it when I was alphabetizing everything. All right, Midget Fetish was a band. I used to tape trade with that guy many years ago. All right, how about Viscera? No.
Yes, I've heard that.
Disgusting porno grind band. Porno grind band from the 90s, Viscera.
Yeah, I used to listen to a lot of stuff like that hard drive I said that had lots of music on it. A lot of it, the music was like Fuck I'm Dead, Everything Becomes Nothing. And then it went into projects that these people had done, but some of it had never been released. It was all like there was video clips of people with like dildos on their heads.
Yeah.
Just weird stuff, but it was all like demos that had like probably never actually even gone into circulation. They'd just been recorded and given to this person.
Yeah, the dildo head stuff was probably more along the lines of some of the bands that I was checking out in the 90s. It was a weird time. But I had to run those by you, man, for shits and giggles. And now any of the listeners could Google those bands and see what they're about if they want. Just not at work, not safe for work. I just wanted to run that question by you real quick. Regardless, you said Fuck I'm Dead. Weren't one or two of you guys into some sort of project called Shit I'm Alive?
Myself and Adrian were, short-lived.
But... Yeah, definitely a piss take on their name.
Yeah, obviously.
It all worked out.
That was an original old-school Australia-Long Island connection, because the label that put out the Fuck I'm Dead album, the first one anyway, was Razorback Records, which was on Long Island, New York at the time.
Yeah.
Back in the day, man.
Hey, Will, are you familiar with Intense Hemorrhage?
Of course. Okay. I allegedly own their CDs, if the FBI is listening. I allegedly may or may not own two of their original albums from back in the day. I don't.
You guys had a couple of new projects with all the same members. One's called Pulverized Cranial Matter.
Okay.
We played those guys 2 weeks ago. And another band called DB Cool. So you should definitely check those guys out.
I definitely will, and I would love to talk to those guys, because if the listeners don't realize, I'm alluding to legal problems those guys may or may not have had many years ago and had some of their albums seized, I believe was the story, something along those lines.
That's right, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to talk to those guys, let me know, to send me a message and I can put you onto that.
Absolutely, for the future, man, because we've really only dipped our toes in Australia, and there's a wealth of history in the underground scene there, as you guys know. But I appreciate you guys coming on and giving us your story this evening. I want to encourage the listeners to go and check out your album, Cursed with Malevolence, on Days Records. I know you guys just had kind of a merch drop, so people could check you out on social media to see what's still left from that. Of course, people are going to check you out at the Ungrateful Dead Fest this July in Australia, not any other country. People could look that up. Guys, like I've been saying, I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I'm just saying.
Fair enough. We're on Zoom, ladies and gentlemen. We're not in the same room. But Guys, I want to give you the floor just for a few minutes because I know you guys are in other bands, other projects. I don't know what has something coming out maybe or something that you just want to plug and promote and get people to check out. So I'll give you guys the floor for a minute for other projects and ventures that you want to promote.
Sure. I'm only in one other project. I joined a band called Alga Mortis from down here. They're like a kind of beat downy, slammy, hardcore band. We've got a release plan to come out this year at some point. I'm going and tracking guitars for that as soon as we finish the podcast. I'm going to be 3 hours late, but that's all right. That's all we got to do. Did I mention that one?
No, no, sure.
I'm also going to be playing guitar for Incinerated when we play a Grateful Dead Fest.
Nice.
So they're my two little projects, but compared to everyone else, I got fucking nothing going on.
The only other thing I have is Odious and Bow. We're playing Ungrateful Dead Fest as well. Two of our members live in New Zealand, so we don't really play around that too much. But we're rehearsing at the moment and getting ready for that. That's basically it, man. For me?
For me, Disentombed should have an EP coming out this year. It's been on the cards for a while. Yeah, just getting that together at the moment. I'm not sure when it's going to be released, but it's all recorded, so okay. I'd say near the end of the year or something.
Okay, yeah, Disentomb, a band that most of the listeners are probably familiar with by now. And on that note, you guys, you know, the door's always open when you guys have something else coming out, something else to promote. Like we said before, it appears we could probably talk upstate New York death metal for another couple of hours. So, but for now, I just want to encourage everyone again, like I said, to follow you guys on social media, support the band, buy the merch, and check out the album. I'm sorry, did I cut anybody off just now? Anything else?
Yeah, I've got other stuff. But it doesn't matter.
Dude, this happened the other day. Whenever there's a bunch of bandmates, I always leave one guy at the end and cut him off with the last question. James, please go ahead, sir.
I've got another band that I started. It's based in another part of Melbourne called Judged by 12.
Mm.
And that is, it's sort of like, I don't know, sort of, it's hardcore, but I also rap.
Huh.
So it's like a mixture of hardcore and hip hop, but it's not like corny hip hop. It's actually hip hop. And it's more of a way for me to get collaborations from friends from hip hop. Like I've got friends scratching on intros that are DJ for my mates and stuff like that. Got friends making beats, friends doing artwork for us. Like it's sort of a project that I can have friends collaborate on. And I also do hip hop stuff under the name Dastardly, and I should have an album and a sort of collaboration mixtape coming out with one of my friends soon. And Judged by 12 also has an album that's almost finished.
It's a hard name, Judged by 12. We're gonna keep our eyes open for that, especially here on Long Island. That's kind of a polarizing genre, the brutal metal and the hip hop, but like here on Long Island and New York and New Jersey, that's kind of like it's a safe space for that genre of music. We love that type of shit. And I had Morty from NYC Shootout on here a while ago.
I did a flyer. They played I can't remember who was. I think it was with Cycles of Abuse,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. They did a show, and I did like a big flyer for them a while back. For one of their shows down at Shakers. I think it was at Shakers.
Yo,
I've also been to Shakers. Cool venue.
How is somebody from Australia telling me about Shakers, bro? That's like me telling you guys about some shack out back where you guys fucking smoke weed and jam. That's crazy, man. I love, by the way, we all do respect to Shakers, but it's like our local, underground venue. You know,
went to Shakers and I saw it was for Bastard Noise, and I saw Without Remorse play there.
Yeah, that's the place to see him, bro. That must have been wild, right?
Yeah, pretty. And Full Blown Chaos also played.
There was probably like a dozen guys trying to kill each other in the actual like area in front of the stage, and everybody else hiding by the pool tables, right?
Beach told me stories about one of their mates getting his head basically pulverized up against a wall there.
Yeah.
And then he was okay, but his skull was fractured.
I never caught it that bit. I caught a stray at Shakers a while ago. Actually, to the death metal band Weeping from New Jersey was playing, and I thought I was safe. I was all the way in the back, and some kid just caught me. Real glasses went flying and everything. Shakers is right. Amityville Music Hall is like your professional music establishment that will hold underground metal bands. Shakers is where people get their skull fractured to hardcore bands. You know,
Amityville is still scary because once you're on that floor, you can't escape. Yeah. Once you're on the dance floor, you can't get out. There's nowhere to go.
Nowhere to go but through. Yeah, man. Wow, dude. I never thought I'd be talking upstate New York death metal and Shakers tonight, but here we are, guys. I appreciate you guys. And I think if anything, you guys sharing your stories and your interest in New York style death metal, we'll just say, has just made it that much more real and hit it that much more home. The sound of your album, I'm just going to say it one more time, Cursed with Malevolence on Days Records. I encourage everybody to go check that out and follow you guys on social media. Follow the other bands and other projects you're involved in social media. Melbourne Murder Designs is where you can check out some of James' graffiti art and design work. Any other plugs and promotions I missed, guys?
I do some production work for bands if
yeah,
they need mixing and all that. So,
all right, fair enough.
You can see everything on my Facebook, Instagram, Adrian Capoletti, it's just my name.
All right, man, got it. So people can also look that up. Guys, it's been great. I really appreciate you giving me your time on what is a early Saturday morning for you. It was very hospitable for me. Any parting words for listeners of Deliquest or listeners of the podcast?
I guess thanks for the support for Curse. It's taken a while to get out. Like we had it done pretty early last year, and it's finally out, and we're loving all the support we're getting for it. It's really nice being compared to like some people that we idolize, and like people saying it sounds like Effigy of the Forgotten, which I think is fucking absurd, but it's, you know, it's so sick to hear that. Yeah, just thanks for the support and thanks for having us on.
Yeah,
thanks a lot, man.
Yeah,
really appreciate it. We've been, I think all of us have listened to your podcast 1,000 times, so
yeah, and this is our first interview.
Yes, so, our first spoken interview. I've only ever done written ones before.
We're also huge fans of the latest Afterbirth album, man. It's fucking awesome.
Well, thank you very much, man. I appreciate the compliments, man. And I can say, actually, Cody, the guitarist of Afterbirth, put me onto Deliquest several months ago. A few months ago when the album dropped, he said this is some really good New York style death metal, but it's not from New York. So it's a mutual appreciation society here, man. We appreciate you guys as well, and hopefully I'll get the opportunity to see you guys live at Amityville Music Hall or at Shakers, sometime. Who knows, man? Until then, we'll be watching you guys, man. Like I said, I encourage everyone to follow you guys on social media, man. Thank you very much, guys. Hope to speak to you again.
Thanks,
man.
Thank you.
Right.
Thanks, man.
All right. And I'm going to cut it there. Just give me 1 second. Deliquest from Australia, man. We appreciate those guys for tapping in, man. A lot in that interview. We're going to be, apparently, we're going to be getting some more upstate New York death metal recommendations down the line. Check out all that music and all the other stuff that we talked about and all the other stuff those guys are involved in and into. Something else I'm involved in here is giving recommendos, as you know. Ian, you still with me?
Yes, sir.
Ian, well, you brought something to my attention. I want to go with your, I want to lead with your recommendation because we're having a little conversation behind the scenes. I'll just let you tell the folks about it and we'll kind of expand on it.
Absolutely. Yeah. We were talking a moment ago, but, what I'm coming with now is, Menstrual Vampires is the artist. This album is their self-titled and it's their first release. This is coming off of Transylvanian Recordings and it came out exactly a year ago, pretty much right now. As of this recording, it came out February 14th, a nice Valentine's Day drop of 2023. And just a little bit about it. This is Scott Connor, otherwise known as Malefic of the solo DSBM project, Zathor. That's not really my cup of tea. I don't know too much about them, but they've been around since late 90s, or he has been around that long, rather. But what Menstrual Vampires is his take on, as Transylvanian Recordings puts it, Autopsy is shit fun inspired old school death metal. And in listening to this one, a lot of stuff that I liked, start with the drum programming. To me, this was reminiscent of like older demo vibes, old school death metal, like wafer thin cymbals. I feel like some of the drums were set so far back in the mix that it really let the disgustingness of the guitar's tone to power through. The vocals, the fact that the same dude that's part of that DSBM project is able to pump out these, like, in my opinion, almost like Demolich inspired vocals is amazing. Very interested in a moment to hear your take on the vocals as well, Will, just with what you do. The guitar tone, definitely right up my alley because it's really gross. Like, I think somebody that fiddles with guitar tone all day would probably hate this in some ways, completely fuzzed out. And then the writing is really good, in my opinion, for a modern old school death metal band. So this doesn't scream anything like super, you know, trendy kid, just caveman shit. I thought it was well written. There was even some like proto brutal inspired riffage. The track I wrote down, also some great track names, but Miscarriage, Fetish, Womb with a View. About a minute in, there's like what I think is almost like a slam passage, and then the main riff of Bestial Encounter are also just another spot that I really love. So with that, Will, I could turn it over to you. I haven't really brought something like this in the past. I know I mentioned Morbific, which is a Finnish death metal band that has a similar vibe, in my opinion, in some ways, at least tonally on guitar work. But what did you think of this one, if you had time to take a listen?
Yeah, I did. I had a lot of time today after I was done shoveling snow to listen to this. Well, really interesting that it's Malefic is what the guy calls himself, right? Zaster. I can't pronounce that appropriately, but respectfully. I'm kind of pedestrian familiar with that project. Obviously, he was in that documentary, the One Man Black Metal documentary. And I've given Zaster, I'm going to mispronounce it, a try because I've been pronouncing it Zaster in my head for years reading it. I don't know what the correct pronunciation is, but I've given it a try a few times. Not necessarily just my style. I'm not putting it down. I mean, people who regularly listen to this show might not be surprised to hear that that's not my usual flavor to begin with. So I thought it was really interesting that this guy came out with this project on Transylvania Tapes. That's a little out of left field and unexpected. Maybe that just shows how ignorant I am. Maybe I don't know who this guy is. But at the same time, this is awesome. I gotta say, it reminded me a little bit of Slow or Slough, another band that I have a hard time pronouncing correctly, probably. The one-man gore grind project from Illinois from the early 90s that still, I believe, is around today and active doing different things. Rick Diamond. I talked about this a little bit recently, too. It's funny how things keep popping up. I'm wondering if this is maybe like a little forebearer to me interviewing some of those guys, but they had the Extreme Scene Records little scene back in the day based on the band Slow or Slough and Rick Diamond and some of his collaborators with a few different bands. This reminds me a lot of that because it is a drum machine, but a lo-fi guitar sound, but there is something to the music more than maybe what people would expect from like me or Adam with Anal Birth, you know, from this 90s one man gore grind thing. Like, you know, this is, there's actually some, there's riffs there. This is death metal. There's I got the impression that with these drum programs, it takes a little bit of time to actually, you know, it's fairly complicated what the guy's doing. If you've ever sat there and tried to program a drum machine, I don't know specifically what he used, if he was using a modern day computer, you know, program to try to sound like a drum machine, or if he really used an old like Boss 808 drum machine or something like that, because it sounds like drum machine death metal bands sounded in the 90s. It has a very specific sound with the drums and the guitar tone and the vocals. Catasexual Urge Motivation from Japan comes to mind. Slow comes to mind. Imperial Feticide from the Czech Republic. I could get into some more. Fleshless from the Czech Republic. I could get into some more obscure recommendations, you know, comparisons, but it kind of fits in a pocket if you know it, from the 90s. It has a retro 90s drum machine death metal sound that I like, with that constant pattering double bass throughout the whole time. Kind of it's like a, you know, Lymphatic Phlegm, maybe, even though they twisted it in their own weird direction. The vocals, again, Lymphatic Phlegm, those super lo-fi kind of smothered vocals that almost appear like a cloud over the music in your ears. I love it. It's something I've always been in love with. It's something that I thought Matt Duncan was able to achieve on the original Afterbirth demo in the 90s that I wasn't part of. It's something that I hear in a lot of lower end, or maybe you want to talk about the Demolich demos, older material by Squash Bowels, even, where they would bring in pitch shifter vocals. There's something about that low, suffocated, bassy vocal sound, man. Especially over this, because the drums and the guitar are not that low end or bombastic. You know, it's the drum machine almost has this kind of creepy pitter patter vibe. You know, you know, like Lymphatic Phlegm. It just kind of keeps the pace with this. Like almost the, you know, like a more industrial type of vibe. The guitars are that death metal kind of evil death metal vibe, but they're very fuzzed out and lo-fi. It's, and then the vocals on top of it, it's something unsettling and unnerving and completely different from what we may have come to expect with death metal. Even the more lo-fi death metal bands that have a drummer in a more traditional recording, this is something kind of, it's its own lane, man. I really enjoyed this, and it's made even the more novelty by the fact that it's by a guy from, you might not expect to do this based on his previous work that he's more known for. And it's one of those things where I guess if you have the perspective and the context to know maybe some of these 90s bands that I'm referencing, I thought it was really genius, and I'm curious how much of an influence they were on him doing this too, in addition to Autopsy. So I'll stop there, but I was really taken aback by this. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, that's great, man. I actually was like writing down some notes on some of the more underground stuff that you were noting in the middle section there of what this kind of sounds like, as far as you know, like Fleshless, Anu, and some of the others that you mentioned. But there was a few that I jotted down. The only other note I had on this one too was, been trying to be more appreciative of cover art that I like nowadays than I have in the past. I think that's something that I completely looked over years ago. I did look up the guy that did the art for this. I was unfamiliar with him, but he goes by Necro Devourer on Instagram. His name's Alberto Cicelinas Molana, and I dug the album art that was on this one. I actually have the tape from this when it came out a year ago.
Awesome. Yeah, we like to always get those physical formats when we're recommending stuff on the podcast. And the artists of death metal, definitely a little bit under appreciated, I think, in some respects. I'm trying to expand and get different entities besides, you know, not necessarily just the guys playing the instruments and singing the vocals on the podcast this year. Some of the more behind the scenes people, I will definitely think about that too. I've reached out to a few artists behind the scenes already, and will continue to reach out. Good point, though. Any closing thoughts on this one, Ian?
No, I think you added a lot there. That was awesome. So everybody take a listen. I think you'll dig it.
All right. And just remind Tom one more time. I went to Catholic school. I can't say the band name.
Yes, of course. It's Menstrual Vampires with their self-titled release.
Now speak. If I couldn't say that last band name, because I went to Catholic school. The listening to this band is going to be a whole nother issue with Catholic school. I'm talking about Unleashed. Not necessarily a band that needs our PR bump here on the Heavy Hole podcast. They're doing pretty good on their own, last I checked, respectfully. Unleashed, infamously formed after Johnny Hedlund was kicked out of Nihilist, who split up and reformed as Entombed to avoid firing him directly, man. Hey, shout out to people getting kicked out of bands. I can sympathize, man. They split up and started a new band to avoid firing him directly. That's kind of a, that must be nice. That's all I'll say. Listen, Unleashed are credited to be one of the first death metal groups to write songs about Vikings and Scandinavian history and heritage instead of more typical subjects like death and gore. Hence, why I don't know if they would have liked me going to Catholic school back in the days. But listen, I'm joking anyway, man. I was cleaning up. I found a whole bunch of old papers and stuff. I found my one of my Catholic school report cards shortly before they switched me to public school. It was like A's and B's for the actual grade, like the test grade, like the scholastic grades. But then they had like a conduct column, and it was all used for unsatisfactory straight down, man. I was just an obnoxious, stupid kid, man. I drove some of those nuns stupid crazy. But listen, for Unleashed, I did it. Where No Life Dwells is the first of a billion full-length albums recorded by Unleashed. They got a lot of albums, man. If you're a fan, that's a good thing. They got a lot of stuff out there. I've always been on this thing with Unleashed where I'm kind of like, you ever like try to like a band and want to like a band and keep trying to go back and it just doesn't click for you? Like, that's a thing with underground metal, I feel like, especially when you're a guy like us who tries to have a wide field of bands, you know?
No, 1,000%. And it's funny you say that. Unleashed kind of sits in that field for me. I like Unleashed for what it's worth. I actually really like this album too, pretty familiar with it. I think I've said in the past on this podcast that I definitely have a fandom for Swedish Death and more of this avenue of Swedish Death, you know, Entombed, Dismember, all that jazz versus the more mellow death stuff that came out of Stockholm or Gothenburg, rather. I like the Stockholm scene. So I liked Nihilist a lot. I actually didn't know the full reasoning behind that. I didn't know that they kicked Hedlund out of Nihilist essentially to form Entombed, but Entombed's one of my favorite Swedish death bands. What's interesting with Unleashed for me is that like most kids finding metal, I listened to Bathory when I was younger, right? And then when Bathory moved from being more of just like the quintessential black metal vibe into that like Viking and paganism shit, I think it was literally around the same time that Unleashed came out. So I'm trying to remember the album. I think Hammerheart was the first like full like Viking, almost having like a power metal vibe, like Forthon or whatever from Bathory probably listened to a shit ton of like Manowar and then dropped that one. But even the album before that, like Blood, Fire, Death, I think, which came out in like 88, 89 for Bathory. Whenever I listen to Unleashed, and especially this era of Unleashed, the really early shit, I'm always wondering in my head, and I just never really look it up, like, what happened first? Because they're Swedish bands, but I always see Unleashed as like, hey, we're the pioneers, the godfathers of that, like, Viking death metal shit. And I always wonder, kind of, like, chicken egg, what happened there? Like, did Bathory kick out some of their Viking-inspired shit before Unleashed, or did Unleashed beat them to the punch? I think at the end of the day, it's kind of apples to oranges because Bathory did it with more of a black metal vibe, and Unleashed is definitely a death metal band. But I hear you. I mean, I can't sit there and listen to – I don't listen to, like, two Unleashed albums front to back, if I'm being honest. Like, I could kick out one CD in the car ride, and then I'm like, all right, I'm good on Viking shit for a little while.
I'm not a big Viking guy. I'm a fast food American guy. Give me Masker, you know, Obituary, all that stuff. But yeah, well, I'm looking it up now. All right. If you're going by Hammer, I'm going to go, if we're talking about Bathory, first of all, yes, Swedish band. I don't know. I was thinking Celtic Frost was Swiss. I was going to mansplain you that Bathory was from Switzerland and be wrong. That would have been funny. Yes, another classic Swedish band. If you're going by Hammerheart, in my opinion, they started experimenting with the Viking stuff on Blood, Fire, Death, which, yeah, I was just recently listening to. But yeah, Hammerheart, okay, so that's 1990. And then if we get it, if we go back to Unleashed, who I kind of am still leading up to talking about their first album, their first full length album, their first demo was 1990. Their first full length album was 91. And I'm going to make the argument here that they really didn't. I mean, maybe in terms of themes and the lyrics, but I'm talking about like that kind of European festival Viking, you know, holding up the goblet, chanting sweet, you know, that Viking metal thing. They don't really lean into that too much until the second album, blatantly. I'm going to make the argument here, and that's part of my whole, like, not getting into Unleashed when I want to argue. So I'm going to say that maybe Bathory broke the ice on that one.
That might be true. They definitely, I don't know if you would agree to this. I think Bathory leaned into like the folklore element, which has what you just described, that whole like European festival fucking vibe where it's like, hey, we're going to have like a fiddler in this. Not that Bathory did that, but like, you know, in Sephirim, the shit that eventually came out way later, that's like the super Viking power metal shit. I think Bathory paved the way a little bit more for that than Unleashed did with this album, because this album specifically, the one that you're calling out, which I keep blanking on the name, I wrote it down though, where No Life Dwells in 91, that album is a death metal album, I think, you know, that just has that like subtle Viking element, I guess. I don't know how to explain it.
Bathory is like the Viking guy like going into the woods and you know, like living alone for 3 days to think about black metal heritage. Whereas like Unleashed is like the biker guy with the Yggdrasil tattoo. You know what I'm saying? Like Unleashed is a little
totally.
Unleashed is a little bit more, you know, street level with it. You know what I'm saying? Unleashed could probably, you know, they're not in the woods. They're gonna beat you up, you know, if you're in Catholic school and trying to talk shit on them, so I better watch where I tread here. Anyway, what I'm going on with Unleashed, I have tried to give them a shot over the years. I listened to some of their like more back in the late 90s when I was getting into all the death metal, and I knew everything I knew because I was a metal warrior with elitist talents. I listened to, I think it was like maybe Victory or Warrior. I'm looking back now. One of my friends had a more modern at the time, late 90s Unleashed album. And then over the years, I tried to listen to some of their stuff. I finally went back. I'm not going to address the allegations that I bought a bootleg CD of their demos called And the Laughter Has Died with a few of their demos on them. But man, their demos are some bombastic, nasty, brutal, ugly shit. I think I talked about them a few months ago. Really worth a listen, the Unleashed demos. And I said to myself, man, maybe their first album is that perfect middle ground between these nasty, dirgy death grind demos and that more, you know, chanting, you know, fist in the air pumping kind of stadium Viking death metal. And I think it really was. I tried Shadows in the Deep, their second album, and it wasn't, there was parts I liked, but there was also parts where I was like, I don't know if this whole album is my style. But where No Life Dwells, that's a sweet spot for me with Unleashed. I will say that I am the guy who can say only the demos in the first album, man, for them, because I'm so elite and sick. I mean, it's actually because I'm not European and true. But it's their first album, where No Life Dwells, it does hit that sweet spot between, it has a much more refined production than the demos, even though the kind of crazy production on the demos is endearing in its own way. What Unleashed did differently from a lot of Swedish bands of this era was they went to Germany to record this album. They recorded it at Woodhouse Studios in Dortmund, Germany in April 91, while everyone was recording at more infamous Swedish studios. And it gives them a little bit, even though stylistically they have a lot in common with Nihilist and maybe even with Entombed and other bands of that era, the production, it's the guitar tone is a little more dialed in than the chainsaw sound that a lot of those bands have. So like, this is, for me, it's a very enjoyable old school Swedish death metal album because it sounds a little different. And it's, as I said, I'm not going to elaborate more. I feel like we kind of talked up Unleashed a lot and gave our own like accounts of dealing with them and Viking metal. But this album is kind of like the sweet spot before they went full Viking metal or incorporated more of that stuff into their sound than I personally would like to listen to all the time. Great album, highly recommended. and go back and listen to their demos too. If maybe some later Unleashed material is a little bit too much on the Amon Amarth side of things for you, if that makes sense, man, I'll leave it there. A friend of mine, I'm not going to blow up his spot, back in the day, who was a little bit older than me and more experienced in death metal, he used to call everything after the first two Unleashed albums Funleashed. That's where he drew the line. So I just wanted to share that too quickly, man. That's always a memory I had in my mind. Oh, so that, yeah, there was my one friend who called them Funleashed, and then I've related the story of Polish Pete, my friend whose family moved to the United States from Poland when we were in high school, and he went to high school with me for a few months, and he was telling me about this amazing metal band called Unleashed for weeks and weeks at school, and I said, Unleashed, Unleashed. I thought maybe it was like a Polish word I didn't know, and he brings in the Unleashed CD. So that's like my history with Unleashed, and here I am like 30 years later actually learning to love some of their stuff, man. I'm going to leave it there before I make myself sound any less true in metal, man. Any final thoughts, Ian?
I got a question for you, Will, and then we'll walk from this one. I don't know what they call it, but you know it like an Amon Amarth show where people sit in the pit and they pretend to like row the boat and shit. Yeah. That's like, I think, one of my biggest pet peeves whenever I have seen that anywhere. I saw a video of like a Sangasugabog show recently where I think that was going on. And that surprised me. You ever played a gig where that fucking happened? I can't imagine any band that you have been incorporated with where anybody would fucking try that. But let's say that did happen to you. How would you feel about that if you looked out at the crowd and saw that? Would you be pumped on it? Would you say, I'm hanging it up, this is the end for me?
No, as a performer on stage, that level of crowd participation and enthusiasm should always be commended. You always want that kind of reaction. That's better than people just standing there and clapping every 5 minutes. You know, that's great. They've been able to really inspire something out of those, and the people that are doing it are obviously having a great time. It is balding, fat, lonely elitists such as myself standing in the back with their arms folded, who are not performing that night, saying to myself, one of my bands could have done this show. No. Listen, it's one of those things, man. This is, I don't want to like completely hijack this. I'll let the music play out for a minute, and then I'll get into this like other pet peeve segment, because I had something lined up similar to this, which just all boils down to guys over 40 not liking people having fun in metal, which I am guilty of being, and I actively fight it. I actively try not to be that guy, but there's that thing sometimes where you're just like, in the 90s this wasn't a flow, like, you know what I mean, like, no way. I don't know. There's something about it, man. Yeah, I'm not into that. I wouldn't do it. To me, it's a little cringy on the outside. But again, as someone who's, you know, as someone who's, you know, been on the road and try, you know, worked in bands and supported bigger bands where I got the opportunity to see larger crowds and have to work to try to win those crowds over. Because when you're out there trying to support bigger bands and you've gotten that opportunity as a working smaller underground band, just because you're supporting the Black Dahlia Murder or Cattle Decapitation or Goat Whore doesn't mean all of their fans are invested in you. You now have to win over their fans every night. So any level of crowd participation, enthusiasm when you're on stage is accepted. I would never look out and see the way someone's moshing or the way someone's participating in the music. As long as they're enthusiastic and they're not, you know, ruining someone else's night, man, you know, whatever, man. There's plenty of people out there that, you know, that are definitely doing their own thing when you get out there and play shows. So, yeah, I wouldn't begrudge anyone that. But I also understand the perspective of people in the crowd who wish that their night was part of something a little bit more clandestine and dark. But then again, at the Amon Amarth show, what do you expect, man? Those guys have a good time.
That was an incredibly politically correct handling of that question. I feel like Big Will 2024, I think you could go into a debate and have the correct answer there. So I get what you're saying. As a performer on stage, that you can look out, I think I'm lucky enough to never be in that position, so I could just be the dickhead in the back that's like, yeah, these kids are fucking morons. But you're also right, you need to know where you're at. You walk into the Amon Amarth show and get mad at that, hey dude, look around, where the fuck you brought yourself to that that rowing, you know. I think it's weird when I've seen it elsewhere, when people are doing it kind of tongue in cheek, where they get that it's cliched and tacky, and they're doing it because of that. I think that's kind of annoying too. But I totally hear what you're saying.
If I saw a couple of kids doing that at a Watain show, I would be a little annoyed. As Watain maybe too. I don't think that they would want to encourage that level of fun. Maybe so. I don't want to put words in their mouth. Again, the members of Watain always invited on Heavy Hole Podcast. I welcome the discussion. But that being said, another person always invited on the Heavy Hole Podcast, Johnny Hedlund of Unleashed. Tom, bring us in with a little bit of that Where No Life Dwells album. To do a person see, to where no life dwell, mister of the first creation, no one shall live to tell. Man, I didn't want to go on a 20-minute tangent about this during the Unleashed recommendation. But yeah, another thing, speaking of people having fun in metal and people being angry about that, this is gonna come out a few weeks later. By this time I'll probably be canceled for it, but I it's Valentine's Day tomorrow, which is a very unmetal holiday. I know it's pull the plug patches, reputable dealer of multitude of officially licensed band patches. They put out like a pink death shirt with kittens on it. From what I understand, this is based on some, like, you know, a design approved by the Chuck Schuldiner Foundation or whatever. You know, this is, you know, it's all above the table. I'm not saying there's anything unfair going on or something like that. I'm in bands with people that wear kitten and rainbow death metal themed ironic t-shirt, whatever. I don't care. I do care, but I don't care that much. I made the post today saying that I want to start a one-man depressive suicidal black metal band because of that. And I got a few reactions. I want to assure people I do love cats. I got a few messages like, death metal heads love cats, didn't you know? like if you've been following my Instagram page, like at least once every 2 or 3 months, there's a picture of one of my cats to assure you that I'm not a weird, creepy cat killer out there in the woods. I do love cats. I do love death. I do enjoy pull the plug patches, and have no complaints about that, their business or anything like that I know of. Invited on the podcast again. It was a joke. But the kittens and death. Even before this, there was like, it would be just like text, just the word death metal and a rainbow. Like, just like, you've seen this, right? These shirts that are like marketed on Facebook a lot. And I have a bandmate who's into that and whatever. I love the guy, but it's too much for me. Is that okay? Is it okay? If it's okay for people to wear that stuff, is it okay that it's too much for me and I don't like that stuff?
I'm going to give like a devil's advocate take, like a flip side of the coin a bit. Firstly, just want to note that what you're saying makes perfect sense. And I think that having a bit of throw up in your mouth after looking at that Instagram post there is warranted. I also like pull the plug patches. I think they forever have done like women's leggings as well. Like they do a lot of like out of the box shit that leans this way occasionally, even with just some like colors that they choose for borders on patches, like shit that's fun, campy. But the reason why I'm okay with this one, this specific instance, is I feel like death is at a point where, and I love death, like early death, the first three albums, some of the my favorite shit. I can listen to it any day of the week. I think it's like, if I don't know if death has ever been in a Hot Topic, but like the concept of like, I could see, you know, a Kardashian walking down the street in like a vintage death shirt just because it fucking looks cool. From like, you know, just the Leprosy album cover or some shit like that. So part of me is like, is that where death as a brand is at this point, where like they're gonna do some shit like this, you know, the people that are taking care of it post Chuck's death. I don't know. So I guess just opening up that as like a thought, like, is, does this make sense for death at this point? Do people, are people going to fucking wear rainbow death shirts? Is that a thing? And should we be okay with it? Because like death is just such a big name or as a brand within like metal t-shirts.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not saying that Pull the Plug Patches shouldn't sell these shirts. I'm not saying that the Chuck Schuldiner estate shouldn't be signing off on these shirts or people shouldn't be wearing these shirts. I'm saying the same way my drummer and reeking aura Hudson, shout to Hudson, check out that new Trog record on the way out, makes fun of me for wearing blue camouflage champion shorts that are a size too big. I should be able to make fun of my other bandmate who wears the death metal kitten shirts. Okay? I'm not playing fashion police, but we can all crack a couple of jokes here. I'm just saying this is not, you know, the if you're going to put out the pink kitten death metal shirts, I can make a joke about starting a depressive suicidal black metal band in retaliation to that part of the culture. It's all a joke.
As you should. Yeah. Is that, I didn't realize that because I saw the same post and I saw your like story on it, which I thought was funny. Is that, you're saying that's like a thing, like that image of cats, like was that used elsewhere? Because that was unfamiliar to me. I hadn't seen that, like that specific image in the past.
There was a little blurry to me. Somebody said something about Chuck liked cats or something like that. I got to hold on a second, man. Let me take a look here now. I'm going
to
pull
I
up.
Do. I kind of hope, sorry to do this to you. If this is how you got like fully canceled right now is because you had this take and then somebody's like, you don't even fucking know Chuck, man. He loved cats and he wanted cats on every shirt and they just never let him. And you're the dickhead for not wanting the cats. I kind of like that.
Oh boy! Well, they are getting some spicy comments on it. Okay, just got the cat shirt from my BF. So excited! Maybe they mean big friend. Maybe they ordered it for me.
They're definitely getting it for their big friend.
A lot of people like this. They're making tons of money with this. So this is really, and I mean, most of these people are probably much younger than me, man. This is just the way of the scene nowadays. So I'm not begrudging anybody. I'm just giving my opinion and kind of ribbing off of this, man. It is what it is. If a bunch of people showed up to my, I made one or two pink Afterbirth shirts when I was home screening them. Here's what the thing. Okay, so recent guest of the show, and if I'm going to believe anybody, I'm going to believe this OG metal historian, Tim Wright of Catacomb Records, Dayton, Ohio, reminded me, I remember Chuck's kitten shirt, Metalheads Love Cats. So maybe, I don't know that this design was used, but maybe Chuck had like just a t-shirt with a cat or kitten on it. Yeah, ironically, I don't know. People can correct me on that. So yeah, I don't know. I guess the speculation was that this was a death shirt back in the day, which I doubt. It's probably more like Chuck actually had a cat T-shirt, you know, or something like that. I don't know. Whatever.
I like that because now this will turn on you, where like somebody in the know is gonna buy this shit, wear it. You could joke on them, and then they'll be like, dude, you're not even a real fucking, you don't know Chuck the way I know Chuck. He had this shirt, and you're not even, you don't name me three death albums even, Will. You don't know them.
I wish people could see my finger wagging rock impression I just gave you while you were saying that to illustrate what I'm about to say. I got receipts. I will print out from the local veterinarian and from the Huntington Animal Shelter the documentation of all the feral cats and the money I've spent trying to rehabilitate them and bring them back from the edge around this place, man. Speaking of which, I'm waiting for the old Islip animal. Shout out to the people at the Islip Animal Shelter, man. I'm trying to get a dog out of them, man. No, no shout if they don't give me the dog. So people, if people want to go toe to toe on the whole animal thing with me, man, I got you, bro. I'm out here putting in work for the animals while you're asleep every day, man. It's all good. The Raccoons too. I don't hate on them, man. Look, regardless, man, I don't want to drag this out too much. Shout out to everybody involved. No hate. I just thought it was a funny little topic, man. Valentine's Day is weekend for posers. We all know that. You know, you got a wife and kids. You got to play the game. Respect. I get it. You know, unless are you just gonna cold dead everybody tomorrow? What are your plans for Valentine's Day, Ian?
Oh, I don't give. Like, I'm at a point. Like, my wife gets the shit for the kids. You know, yeah, like she told me yesterday. She was like, "I bought shit. We're gonna give them like a little piece of candy, whatever the fuck they're gonna get." And then, that's it, man. I don't got time for this shit anymore. I'm not trying to impress anybody. So,
yeah, I mean, four kids. You're more like two like highway department workers sharing a pickup truck for several years together.
Exactly. Like, I think the best thing I could give somebody is like I don't even whiskey and NyQuil. I don't know. Like that would be a dream for both of us. I think so.
Yeah. Well, she couldn't drink for 9 months, so it's open season now. If she wants a cocktail, that's a good.
She's breastfeeding, so you can't. Oh. You got to be careful. You can't. You know, they go straight from the tap there, and they can't get their hands on that shit that early. So, but she's not a drinker anyway. Like she's not a big drinker, so okay. Not a huge problem. But it is crazy what you got to think about, man. I'm happy nobody's sucking on my nipples. That's all I got to say about that one.
I need some scotch after that one. oh boy. Okay, listen, it's a family I was gonna say it's a family show, but that was kind of a family statement. You're turning it up over, you're turning it up all around on me here, man. You're unleashed tonight, Ian. Got you out of the bottle, man. You had a lot of pent up energy over the last few weeks sitting around the house taking care of the kids, man. I'm glad we unleashed you tonight, man. I'm not gonna make a joke utilizing the other band name that we recommended, but check them out too. Ian, thank you so much for your time. Deliquest from Australia. Honorarily from New York, from Long Island. You get a chance to check out their album, Ian?
No, I want to. Okay. So, yeah, I definitely will.
Yeah, after this episode, there's going to be a lot of people playing catch-up on Deliquest. So definitely do that. Great, great band. Dropped one of the best. And, you know, the whole thing is they play death metal that's very influenced by, you know, your suffocations, your internal bleedings, your pyrexias, whoever you want to talk about out here, man. They definitely did their homework with that style, as we talked about in the interview. So definitely one of the best New York style death metal albums of last year. I'm not being facetious, man. Very, you know, respect to those guys. Appreciate them. Ian appreciates you. I want to remind the listeners, check us out on Patreon, check us out on heavyholepodcast@gmail.com if you want to send an email, recommend some stuff, tell us what's going on by you, tell us what's up in the scene, what you like, what you don't like, whatever, something I said. Maybe you like cats on shirts. I don't know. Maybe you saw a death pink shirt in 1990. Maybe you have the first one and it's on sale for $1,000 on eBay. I don't know. We also got the old voicemail number, should be in the description wherever you're listening to this, for the same principle. Just let us know what's up. You want to recommend something, you want to not recommend something, you want to comment on something we've been talking about, it's all good, man. Tune in. Besides that, like you mentioned, Ian, we're trying to bring you the best possible interviews coming, man. I did a big backlog of interviews in January. We're still trying to get those out, and I'm booking some more people coming up, man. So just stay tuned. Heavy Hole Podcast. We're going to bring it to you like we always do. Ian, thank you so much for joining me today. Appreciate you, buddy.
Thank you for keeping me sane. You know, appreciate being here.
Reverse, man. Yeah, metal keeps us all insane, man. I appreciate you, man. But let's see. So we got Australia. We did the recommendations, the snow, cats and death metal, snow in front of the neighbor's driveways. Yeah, that's about it, man. I guess next time when it comes to pushing the snow out in front of the neighbor's driveway, man, I'm going to have to go out there and give them one. I don't know.
Yeah, give them two.
Yeah, give them what for. The dawn has gone, the shadow of the blood, but there was no time in there.